Syn Media acknowledges and pays respects to the people of the Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nations, on whose unceded lands the Syn office stands. Syn and the Art Smitten team would like to further acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ancestors of the lands and waters across Australia where our content reaches. Art Smitten would like to expand that respect to Bunjil, the great creator ancestor of the Kulin Nations. Sovereignty has never been ceded. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Syn Media. You're listening to Art Smitten, our program for local arts and culture in and around Nar, Melbourne. Today we're very excited to have Pip Wallace joining us in the studio. Pip is currently the senior curator at MoMA, Monash University Museum of Art. She has previously curated at the NGV, Chisinau Gallery in London, and Gertrude Contemporary. Coming up, Pip has curated a solo exhibition of work by acclaimed Chinese-American artist Candace Lin, titled The Sex Life of Stone. Lin is an interdisciplinary artist who works across ceramics and sculpture, installation, drawing, video, and with living materials and processes, materials such as mold, mushroom, and bacteria. Her work considers the politics of representation, focusing on issues of race, gender, and sexuality.
MoMA's exhibition will feature a new installation, Untitled, made this year, co-commissioned by MoMA with the 24th Biennale of Sydney, that delves into the speculative and historical entanglements surrounding manganese pigment, industrial mining, ancient trade routes linking Asia and Australia, and the intriguing sexual properties of sea slugs.
Sounds very interesting, and we're very keen to chat with Pip all about this upcoming show. It'll be opening on the 29th of June at MoMA in Caulfield. Welcome, Pip. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we wanted to just start by a bit of an introduction to not only you, but also MoMA, and let us know what it's all about working within a university gallery.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's amazing. MoMA is obviously the Monash University Museum of Art, set on the Caulfield campus at Monash Uni. So we're wedged nicely between the Fine Art School and the Art, Architecture and Design School. And that was really intentional. The museum used to be on the Clayton campus, and about 15 or so years ago was moved over to Caulfield to be closer to those, I guess, creative faculties.
Yeah.
We have a nice friendly relationship with those teaching and learning contexts, but the museum itself is focused on a couple of things. Exhibition making is one of them, but we have a couple of other maybe less publicly visible activities. We look after the Monash University Art Collection, which is a collection of post-war Australian art. And we also look after all the public artworks at Monash. So
that's cool.
A really big program of commissioning and creating large-scale public artworks for the campuses. But the context of the university is pretty distinctive, and it's the first time I've worked in a university, so I'm about a year into this role, and it's just amazing what it allows you to do in a museum when you're set in a, you know, research context. And we think of the way that artists work as research and contributing to creative knowledge in the same way as other academic fields. And so we feel like we're a good fit there, and that our exhibition and publishing activities really segue with some of our colleagues in their teaching. So we do a lot with our colleagues in the faculty, and a lot with the students. And so in that way, the museum's audience is really special. Of course, students and academics go to other museums as well, but we feel like we have a very close relationship that is kind of two-way, and we feed into what each other are doing. So it kind of gives us a bit of scope to think about how our exhibitions might intersect with areas of research across the university, not just in the creative fields, but, you know, we work with the School of Business and the medicine faculty. And it's amazing how, you know, as we all know, diverse artists' interests are and how their work touches on all different fields.
Definitely.
Yeah, that kind of touches on my next sort of question of, like, I know you've worked at Gertrude Contemporary and the NGV in the past. So I was curious as to how those responding to those audiences has changed now as a curator at a museum gallery, and kind of what that has led to with your day-to-day operations as a curator.
Yeah, good question. It's so different, those contexts. So, you know, Gertrude Contemporary, really important independent space, started in the 80s as an artist-run kind of venture, has stood the test of time, and serves a artist and artistic community with, you know, the studio program and exhibitions that are testing form and material. At the other end of the scale, almost, is the NGV, you know, state institution. So holds the Victorian Public Art Collection, huge team, huge staff, and is really responsible for being open and accessible to the widest possible public in Victoria. And so they're really different responsibilities. And MUMMA, we fit in between there in a way. You know, we feel that as a research museum, our artist community is one of our most important, and we work really closely with artists, not only in exhibition making but in publishing and in all our school education programs. Everything is very artist-led. On the other hand, we have a very wide public, not just the university audience, but people from all over Australia and internationally come to MUMMA. And so we're speaking to a really wide range of people. And so I guess we try to, in our different programs, whether that's through public programming or through our talks program, how do we speak to all of these different audiences who might bring different levels of knowledge, different kinds of interests, different reasons for visiting the museum. You know, for some people it's a social activity, for others it's a learning activity. So I think that's one of the biggest juggling acts of being a curator, is no matter what your context, is understanding who your communities are, whether that's who you're making work with or who you're making it for, and being able to kind of bring all of those pieces to the table on a day-to-day level. I think that means that it's about collaboration, because of course you can't do it all with one brain. You have to have different perspectives. So at MUMMA, for instance, you know, work really closely with our public programs coordinator Anna Taylor, who brings kind of perspectives that I would not have thought of on an exhibition. So with upcoming exhibitions, we'll sit down and look at, you know, what is the work about, what is the artist thinking about, and then she goes away and comes up with other angles that people might use to access the exhibition. Or for instance, the head of education, Melissa, thinks about it through a curriculum lens or a student lens, from like primary school, right, little primary school students, right through to year 12 and into tertiary, and how our exhibitions can touch on some of the things they're already learning at school. So we try to find, I guess, all different levers into our program.
Do you have a favorite public program, maybe from this year or recent, since you've been working?
We did have a great one for our first exhibition of the year. It was an exhibition of work by Tungurung artist Stephen Rahl and German-Vietnamese artist Sung Tu. And Stephen was in conversation at the end of the exhibition, a public in conversation event with writer Tristan Harwood, and he began the event by getting on his skateboard and tearing around the gallery, which was a great way to get people's attention.
Yeah, I was there for that event, and hearing the sound of the skateboard wheels on that hard polished concrete floor was really like, oh, this is how we're starting today. It was very engaging. That's
true. It was
true.
Very Steve, wasn't
it? Yeah, like, and it brought a new context to the entire show. Like, it just changed the energy of how you walked about the space encountering his work after just seeing him nonchalant skating. It was very nonchalant as well.
I think it's an example of the great way that programs open up an exhibition, because his work is very serious, you know. It speaks about very serious subjects of colonization and ongoing settlement, and but at the same time it's so invested with humor, and his approach is a real, you know, he has a lot of jokes in his work even though they're heavy. So I think it kind of maybe alerted people to the presence of humor
and to his personality as well.
Totally.
I think that's important.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I guess maybe we're also interested, I mean, I was interested just then when you were talking about the difference between maybe working as a curator. Obviously, you've worked in two spaces with quite extensive collections, and I'm wondering, how does kind of navigating, creating shows maybe around these collections, what would be the difference between NGV versus MoMA in that way?
I mean, NGV has such an incredibly huge collection. I think it's around 80,000 objects, and it's what we would have once called an encyclopedic collection. You know, it covers antiquities to fashion and textiles to contemporary installation. And that is amazing, because when you work in a space like that, you get to work alongside curatorial colleagues who have real expertise in a particular area, which is fascinating. And you learn a lot from them, and they have this depth of knowledge about their field. At MoMA, our collection, I guess, aligns with my area of interest, which is contemporary art. And so our collection is actually incredibly hardworking, in that it is about 50% on display at any one time around the university campuses, the various campuses that Monash has, and external loans. That's an incredible figure. I was really stunned when I got to MoMA to realise that so much of it is visible at any one time. Yeah. It's really good that it's out there being seen, not in a store.
Not hidden away.
Yeah. So that's a big difference. I think the perhaps the most interesting and challenging experience I've had curating a collection was working on the exhibition Queer Stories from the NGV Collection, which was on at NGV a couple of years ago, and was a collaboration between a group of curators. And it was really a kind of opportunity to look back at the collection and think about what were the stories that hadn't been told, and how could they be brought to life at a point where, I guess, queer lives are more visible than they have been in the past. So that was a fascinating experience, because it basically revealed all the gaps in the collection, and the exhibition had to be very honest about what those gaps were, but it also gave us an opportunity to perhaps highlight things that have been overlooked. So a collection can be so fruitful in that way, because it doesn't only tell the story of the artwork, it tells the story of the society who collected it. So what was the State Institution of Victoria at each of those points along its history? Who was the director? Who was deciding what came in and for what reasons? So I think a collection, you know, I'm such a nerd. When I look at a collection work on the wall of any gallery or museum around the world, almost before I look at the title, I look at when it was bought, because it tells you so much. Like, is this something they've bought recently thinking they need to fill a gap? Is this some gem that's been in the collection for decades? You know, it says
a lot. Was it gifted?
Yeah,
for sure. That Queer show is a great example, I think, especially the connection between fashion and other aspects of the collection that aren't necessarily visual art on their own.
Yeah, well, I mean, the NGV collection is great in that way, that it's cross-disciplinary, and MoMA's collection is the same in that it covers, you know, design, as well as more, I guess, classical fine art. And the works are, in the same way, a story of Australian art making since the founding of Monash. So the collection was established at the very beginning of the university in the mid-20th century as a really foundational aspect of Monash's activities and how Monash understood itself to be. So we're going to be this place where creativity is valued, and that's carried on, and students and staff live around the works.
Yeah.
How much of a input do you have for the type of work that might go on display in, say, like the law library at Clayton versus for the School of Business foyer? Like, do you purposefully try to challenge some of their maybe preconceived notions of what would look good in their foyer?
That's a good question. Look, I think it's a dance between accommodating, challenging, having a conversation. We always put forward some ideas and think about what might be interesting in that context, whether it riffs off the subject matter of the faculty, whether it speaks to the design of the building that it's in, whether it can bring a new perspective to that school. And sometimes, yeah, there are challenges thrown in there for sure. Yeah.
I think saying it's a dance is a very fun way to put it.
Yeah, diplomacy. Sure. Curation is all about diplomacy.
I think we're keen to ask you a bit about your own practice as a curator and maybe the pathways that led you to working in this industry, I guess.
Yeah. So what was your beginning from studying? What was the pathway that has ultimately led you to being a senior curator at MUMMA?
Well, I thought I was going to be an artist, but luckily for everyone, I didn't do that. But, yeah, I applied to art school and nearly went to art school and then realised that actually I much prefer reading and writing about art than making it myself.
Yeah.
And so I went and studied art history at Melbourne Uni, and then I just, got on a roll with, you know, volunteering here and interning there, and got really involved in Seventh Gallery, which, you know, amazing artist-run space in Melbourne, still around incredibly, and was on the board there, which is just a kind of all-in thing. If you join the board of an artist-run space, it's like it just you can give it everything. Yeah. Still, there's more, and that was really great on the ground learning about what it means to make exhibitions, but also look after artists. You know, run a small business effectively. Yeah. Be responsible for funds and leases and OH&S and all the parts. So it was great learning. I mean, I also went and did a Masters of Art Curatorship, but I really think that the the on the ground stuff was just as valuable, if not more. Yeah, I did an internship at Gertrude Contemporary. And I just basically hung around until they gave me a job.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. But I was very lucky that I had great mentors, people at uni, you know, like Alison Ingalls, who ran the curatorial master's program, through to kind of curators who were working in spaces that I admired who agreed to chat to me. And I guess I just was so excited about the ideas that art opens up, and you know, it's the same reason I keep doing it, that it just seemed very exciting and you didn't know what the next show would unfold, and so I just kept kind of trying to get experience in different kinds of spaces, and I did an internship at the end of my master's at the NGV in the photography department with Maggie Finch, the amazing curator, and I got to work on a collection of work that Robert Rooney had just donated to the gallery, and I had a real passion for conceptual art practices, and that just, you know, spoke to me, and I really dived into that. And, you know, like all the interning eventually led to little part-time jobs here and there. And, yeah, my first kind of role was at Gertrude as, I think it was like gallery coordinator, or, you know, running the openings and all the, you know, the bookshop and all those things, and just being around what was happening. And I just progressed from there. I went to London to work for the Chisenhale Gallery, which was an amazing experience. And I just really, going away, even though I always come back, going away to work has been so rewarding. So I've gone and worked in London and in Los Angeles and in Berlin at different points. And even though I always return, they're such fruitful periods, and, you know, I meet so many people that still inform what I do here. And those relationships have led to collaborations and partnerships and co-commissions. And, you know, when you're starting out as a young curator, that person also will end up in a job somewhere, and you'll stay in touch and you'll make a show together one day. And it's kind of been a great way also, like travel and work overseas or residencies overseas has been a great way to kind of understand how different art sectors work. And that in turn has given me more clarity on how ours works here and what's distinctive about it, both positive and negative, and how we could adapt and what we could bring to Australian art, or what's needed, or what's, you know, what it has that other places don't have. So I think, you know, like for instance, coming back to Melbourne last year after a period in Germany, I was just so excited to feel the kind of energy around artist-run spaces again that I feel like I hadn't felt for, you know, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, even if they're in garages and back sheds and lounge rooms, and like that's, to me, the most kind of vibrant part of Australian art, even if it's not very visible widely, it's kind of this like engine room, this kind of productive and chaotic and social space that feels really distinctive to Australia. And it's partly comes out of the hardship of being an artist in Australia, because there's so, you know, the market's small and there's limited opportunity, and so there's this let's generate it for ourselves attitude, which is amazing, and we all benefit from it.
Definitely.
You sort of said at the beginning, like, choosing curating over a potential artistic practice because of the way you see and feel how it opens up to other branches of knowledge perhaps, or opportunities. I'm sort of wondering, what's your particular area of research most fascinating to you personally right now that you're hoping will branch out into your curatorial projects maybe next year or in the future?
I guess I've been really embroiled in this performance research that we were talking about a bit earlier. So this Precarious Movements project that I've kind of been devoted to for the last 4 years, along with colleagues from other institutions around Australia and the UK. And that kind of came out of my natural inclination towards performance art. So I kept finding myself wanting to work with performance artists and coming up against the challenges of doing that and the kind of limitations of our sector in looking after performance art and artists. And I guess maybe, you know, going further back, that, you know, I think once upon a time I thought maybe I would like to be a dancer, and the live and the performative have always held a really fascinating place for me in art making. And so I'm just drawn to how performance challenges the visual arts, you know, in the ways we talked about, in terms of temporality, in terms of space, in terms of kind of the social and the relational. And I feel like it's a very fruitful space at the moment for us to learn about how museums can change. So one of the things that I took away from these years of study with this group, Precarious Movements, was that museums are obviously going through a huge kind of existential shift over our lifetime from the kind of classic museum, which was really an education public good facility that taught the culture as it was canonized, to now the recognition that, of course, culture doesn't work in that way, that museums need to be more responsive, that they need to reflect greater diversity of voice, and that one of the ways we can kind of like shake them and undo them a bit is through performance, which refuses to be static, you know, unlike the canon, the objects that you can collect and hold and they stay still and the same over hundreds of years. Performance art kind of refuses to do that. So I really love it as a kind of lever for opening up what a museum might be. So I've been really fixated on performance art in the last few years, and I guess that's flowing into Ivan's commission coming up later this year.
Amazing.
Yeah, awesome.
So beyond that, I was thinking actually when you were in Germany, the artist-run or the non-for-profit museum you worked with, sort of, I had a little look at their website and they had a bit of a about talking about the origin of the word museum being muse, right? And I think it's quite interesting you sort of brought maybe that sphere into Australia when you've come back. You're working in a museum but kind of shifting their idea of themselves by commissioning a performance art piece for a week. And just this interesting little thread there. So I'm just wondering, what are the creatives locally and abroad that have been really inspiring, not just necessarily the way you conduct yourself as a curator, but your research again?
Well, that's such a good question. I mean, I guess there's the artists that I follow and that I'm intrigued to see what they'll do next. And, you know, Ivan's been one of those artists for me over the last few years, and it's really great to be able to work with him after having watched and seen.
That must be
things.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really exciting to be able to bring part of that practice to life here. I mean, the other part of I guess, you know, working in a community the way that we do is that other curators are a source of inspiration as well, and seeing what peers are doing at spaces overseas. Like while I was in Berlin, Anna Gritz was appointed as director at Haus am Waldsee, which is a really interesting kind of house museum space, maybe a bit like our Heidi Museum in Melbourne. And she was a curator who I'd known in London, and I was so interested in how she was going to tackle this really particular museum. Like, you know, house museum is quite, it's got a kind of conservative form.
Yeah.
And it's been like, I've just been so inspired to see her kind of challenge that institution and that audience with programming that, you know, takes on issues of our day in a kind of rigorous way. And so people like that, you know, peers who are really shaking things up and trying new things, and kind of, I think that's inspiring because it's hard work. You know, institutions by their very nature are sturdy, solid things that don't necessarily want to change. And that's not to say that it's like us against institutions, because we are the institutions, you know, like the workers, we make it as well. Like, no one's kind of outside. So I think it's about like seeing that working in a museum is a responsibility and an opportunity to play a role in its evolution. Yeah,
but also maybe the notions that the audience might have of what it means to enter that space as well. I am a bit wary of time. We were going to move into another segment, but I thought I'd just ask now, would you have any advice for young and emerging curators and or artists and or people interested in the field and the industry?
Yeah, I think that traditional paths of curatorship are not necessarily the ones to look to anymore.
Mm.
The arts sector is much more diverse in its forms. You know, I think we've got much better at understanding the role of different formats and organisations, whether that's radio, festivals, you know, residency programs. Yeah. Museums are just one of those. So I think being really open-minded about where you might find the beginning place is a good one, and that there are incredible opportunities in Australia for support. They're difficult to get, but that if you have a chance to insert yourself into different contexts, whether they're galleries or the commercial sector or the museum sector, that's kind of the way that I think you can generate a kind of insight into where you might most feel passionate about. I guess that's not really advice, but more of a kind of openness, I would say.
True, yeah. You have to work to find yourself after uni and find your own, I mean, maybe not practice necessarily, it's in freelancing or anything, but knowing where you fit, I think, is...
Yeah, I think, no, but I think you're right, like, having a kind of passion and generating, you know, I think obviously it's so hard because you have to work to live and all of the factors of our contemporary life of challenges of survival, have to be balanced. But if there is opportunity to make projects, even if it is in the back shed or, you know, it's an online publication or, you know, these things are, I think, so valuable, and it's what people look to. They're looking for people with ideas. Yeah. And yeah.
We're lucky to be in Melbourne, where it's all going on as well.
Yeah. Why be anywhere else?
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with us. We'll just do a quick little promo before you leave. We have been talking to Pip Wallace, who is here from Monash University Museum of Art, and we have mostly been chatting about the new show coming up on the opening on the 29th of June, which is Candice Lynn, a solo show called The Sex Life of Stone. That'll be running from 29th of June to the 7th of September. And there are some pretty awesome sounding programs and writing going along with that one. So if you want to check out on Mama's website, you can have a sauce of that. And there's a free view events where a cat could lead you around the gallery. I think that one my listeners might be very keen on. So check that one out, guys. And thank you again, Pip, for coming in.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for having me.